Hello and welcome to Chemical World. It is 4 p.m. on Monday, May 12th, and I am coming to you straight from my apartment several days before that with my beautiful co-host, Kenna Crampton-Steinler. Kenna, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, this is awesome. It's exciting to do a pre-record and in a different setting, so.
Yeah, we got our fancy vocal mic out. We got the babes on the in the corner hanging out. So, yeah, it's a little, like, disorienting for me to not be in KD&K, but always such a pleasure to sit down with you and just still very excited to have you back.
Yeah,
it was your first show back after a long leave last month that we had our live membership drive episode. And, yeah, I'm just still kind of reeling, still to in Friday mornings and just very excited to have your beautiful voice and energy back on our radio.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been kind of surreal coming back, just being able to, I mean, even just going back to what we were saying right before we started recording of, like, you can change directions any time, you know, in your life, like checking in with yourself on if you're happy with whatever. And I was feeling a little stuck in my radio show, especially my music show. And so having that break and coming back has been so amazing. And, you know, I was saying this on Friday, like, it's just so much fun to be like, oh, I don't have to follow any sort of weird structure that I came up with for my show. I can do whatever I want. And it's been really fun just playing music that I enjoy rather than feeling like I have to follow some sort of arbitrary structure that I came up with.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think I struggle with the music shows because every other week it's always right around the corner and it's always that crunch to, like, get music together. And for me, it's always like, I want to make sure I'm playing different music and not the same thing I played on last show, right? But then when I, like, so I haven't had a music show in, I want to say, a couple years now. Oh God, was I looking at old documents or was I dreaming? All of a sudden I'm having a weird memory where I'm like, did I used to have a Saturday night show? Why would I let go of that? But anyway, but being away from it, like, it makes me miss it. It makes me appreciate it more. And so I love the option to be a sub because then I don't have that same, like, pressure. And then I can really enjoy my music shows when I do go in. Although I will admit I make a lot more mistakes.
But that's okay. That's the beauty of community radio. And I think, like, you also have more time to, like, be like, because I especially in these shows, I've been like, I get to play, like, Years by Sierra Farrell. I've been obsessed with that song for the last, like, 2 years, and I definitely play it a lot. And so being able to play songs like that you're like, okay, at least I know it's been over a year since I played it. Yeah, so it's okay.
For sure. Before we started recording too, we were also talking about, you know, really the meat of the show being our personal conversations about addiction. And just now when you said that about, you know, we can always start over, like, every day, every moment is a potential pivot point. And, you know, we make choices, and of course choices, I often say, are very much rooted in opportunity. Like, I don't necessarily have the same choices that you do, or vice versa, or as my neighbor, or so on and so forth. So our choices are going to look a little different based on our personal experiences and our culture and all those things. But, you know, it also just makes me think of when we're talking about addiction, I often say substance abuse or substance misuse or however you want to label it, it's not its own standalone condition, right? It's a symptom of other conditions, and it goes hand in hand with depression and anxiety. And we were also talking before we got on about, like, my really intense scheduling system. And people are always, I feel like people often ask me about it, and people kind of who don't do the bullet journaling or the scheduling, they like, I think that would help me figure out my life. And I'm like, yeah, it has a lot, but 5 years in, is it just causing me more anxiety at this point, right? And I say all that to say, I've been really into this idea recently as I continue to work on my own anxiety and depression, which is, you know, obviously improved a lot, but a lifelong battle. This thought has been helping me a lot, that every moment is a brand new moment. And in this brand new moment, I'm free from the anxieties of my past. And so I, like, take this deep breath and I'm like, that stupid thing that I said to that person I really respect, that's in the past. That's not in this moment now. I'm being reborn in this moment, in this breath. And that's something that I've been utilizing a lot recently. I always have new tools and tricks that I'm picking up, and just that, you know, if we're not happy with where we are, we can make choices to change it. And we're not inherently rooted in our what we perceive as like past mistakes or yeah. whatever the case may be, we always have that choice to utilize this new moment to create something different for ourselves.
Yeah, I love that. That's, I mean, it's a, it's another way of saying like one day at a time or one moment at a time. And yeah, it's like, I kind of laughed a little when you said, you know, you're with the struggling with depression and anxiety, because it is such a lifelong thing. Like one day you're like, I've got this all figured out. And then the next day you're like, I don't know anything. It's like a lot of it is just understanding that you can calm yourself down as you're getting anxious and learning that like it is like in your brain, and like finding different tools. Like I started, yeah, like massaging the very back of my neck and breathing in, and then breathing in through your nose and out through your mouth longer, you know, and just trying to like calm myself down. It happened to me. I was going to my son's ear doctor appointment, which was at the hospital where he was born and where he was in the NICU for 3.5 months. And I just so happened to walk up to the spot. One of the ways that I walked up to the hospital so many times for those 3.5 months that I was there, and my whole body just tensed up, and I just had to keep telling myself, like, you're just here for a quick appointment. You will not be here for more than a couple hours. Because my body was like, oh my God, we're here again, we're here again, we're here again. And, you know, you just start freaking out and just reminding yourself that, you know, you're okay. You're not about to be attacked by a lion. Because your body responds that way, you know, as cool as evolution is, we still have to deal with, like, anxiety is an important part of survival. And so, you know, just to learn to work with it rather than against it is... That is a challenge for sure.
Yeah. And it brings up the whole concept of like healthy stress versus unhealthy stress, right? Like if you had no stress, you would never get out and do anything. You wouldn't feel the drive and need. So it's like, we do need this healthy amount of stress. Another technique that I kind of just came up with on my own, been using, it's been a long process for me of coming to understanding of what PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, really is and how different it can look for other people. God, it makes me think of, like, it's so similar to when I had COVID, right? Like, I had that moment when I had COVID where I took a sip of something and was like, oh, I can't really taste this. So I must have COVID. And then there was a part of my brain that was like, well, I can taste it a little bit, so I think I'm okay. Even though, like, I intuitively, like, knew right away that that's what it was. But I was like, in my mind, it's like, this isn't what I have heard it described as. I still have some sense of taste. And it reminds me so much of my relationship with PTSD, where I was like, well, I don't think that I have this thing that I've seen portrayed in the movie, because that's just one person's version of what that condition manifests like, right? And so it's taken me a long time to really understand what that means and looks like for me. But I've started identifying like really common triggers I have. And so when I like kind of feel the trigger come on, my internal dialogue starts saying, don't remember anything, don't remember anything, don't remember anything. And it could be any sentence that I'm just repeating, but it's like a mantra that keeps me in the present moment instead of being pulled in to those memories. Because, yeah, it's been interesting for me, because I was like, well, I'm not having these flashbacks like I am in the movie. And 10 years later, after, you know, kind of being on this journey of figuring out what PTSD is for me, I'm like, oh no, I'm constantly having that happen. It just doesn't look how it looks or feel how you think it's going to feel in the movies, but that doesn't mean it's not happening.
Yeah. It's like, I keep looking up what, overstimulation means.
Oh God, yeah.
Because I'm trying to figure out.
Like, me at first Friday.
Yeah, and I was like, because I've been, you know, like, I just notice I do these weird things that, of course, now you, like, on Reels, and, like, they come up, and they're like, this is what stimming looks like, and then you're like, oh my God, I do all of those things, like, chewing the inside of your lip, and twirling your hair, and touching, whatever, weird things that I was like, had no idea had anything to do with being overstimulated. So then I'm like, what does it feel like to be overstimulated? I have no idea, but I feel like I must be overstimulated a lot, because I'm doing these things all the time. So I don't know. It's so, I've noticed also that I'm just a very, like, I think I have been so disassociated for so much of my life that that's kind of my normal state. And it takes a lot for me to be like, you need to be in here. Like, what is happening right now? And it's really easy to just kind of be taken out of the moment. And it's sort of like with kids where you're like, okay, I have to feed them and I have to change their diaper and I have to make sure they sleep this much and da 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 da, that you almost forget that you're taking care of a human being that you made. That's your own child, you know? It's like just something that you have to take care of. And it's crazy how you can just get taken out of what's really happening.
Well, and it's not the same, but it is very similar. Like, that's how I feel with work. It's like I can never, it's hard for me to stop and celebrate the successes and celebrate, like, this baby that I created out into the universe, because it's like, okay, well, now I have to do this whole list today. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's never ending. And you get lost in the day-to-day chores or whatever that make the situation functional. And you sometimes, I think, forget. And I think that happens to parents a lot, where it's easy to get overburdened, overstimulated, and kind of even resentful and not, you know, appreciate the beautiful family that you have. And that's totally normal. I think whether it's a child or an animal or a job or whatever, I was just thinking this last night with my dogs, that I used to like get into thinking walking them was such a chore, and now they're gone and I like miss that chore. Yeah. And like think about taking it for granted. I feel like I had a situation recently where I think overstimulated is almost like kind of a buzzword right now, like gaslighting was a couple years ago. But it's good because it's like it's becoming part of the cultural awareness and the hive mind. And so now we're able to identify what this looks like in our lives. And I don't think I'd really thought about this before, but I had a situation recently where basically my boyfriend's like, go say hi to your friend that's standing right there. And I had just walked out. I had just gotten to this space. I had just walked out. There's people everywhere. And he's saying like, go say hi to your friend. Go say hi to your friend. And I just freeze. And he's like, what's wrong with you? Why are you going to say hi to your friend? And I'm like, after the fact, I'm like, I was very overstimulated in that moment. There was a lot going on. And I know you're being super supportive and amazing, but like, you're like telling me to go do something and I can't like figure myself out in this space right now, you know? And then first Friday I walked into Beer Works and was like, oh my God. And it didn't help that I had like, you know, had a little medicine before I came down. But I'm like, it took me like 20 minutes to fully just adjust to like how many people were out. Cause I mean, you know, first Friday hits with a vengeance in May. Like it was crazy out, in the best possible way. But it like, I noticed how I kind of like find myself in this disassociative fog in these settings. And it takes me a while to, I mean, even on, you know, a regular day in a bar or restaurant, it takes me a while to like fully absorb like everybody in the room and everything that's going on, because it's like too much for me to process.
Well, and
at once.
Also, if you're like a hypersensitive person too, like you grew up like we did with people who were kind of in addiction, and you had to sort of be on guard and know like what type of mood the people you were around were gonna be in order to like, you know, make sure that you didn't get in trouble or whatever, you know. I think that when you're hyper aware of the way that everybody acts because you have to constantly keep the peace, I think it's really easy to get overstimulated because you have to know what everybody that is there is doing. And like, so I think like for some people, they can just be in that situation and they're just, you know, cued into like who they're talking to, and it's not like they're... But for me, it's like, we need to make sure that we're safe. So we have to make sure that like, we kind of understand what's happening with every group of people that are around us. So I think it's, maybe that's one reason why we get overstimulated in those types of situations. I don't know. Yeah. That was literally just something that came into my head as we were talking.
I love it. Those are the best things. And it's like a symptom of that like hypervigilance. And I always say too, like a fear isn't irrational if it's happened to you before. So sure, like this man is probably not going to attack me, but I have been attacked by men that I knew, friends, coworkers, bosses, you know, partners, family members. So it's just like, to me, that is a very real threat at any given time. And I think that's hard too. It's hard for me to get over that threat of physical assault in public, basically. So I'm like constantly on guard for that. And this is why people use drugs.
Yeah.
Oh, the anxiety and depression.
Yeah.
And
it's sure.
And like the mental disassociative fog is like very threatening and panicky, whereas like choosing to disassociate and be like relaxed in an event through some form of sedative, whether it's alcohol or cannabis or opiates or benzos or whatever the case may be, it's like, because it's a lot to be out in the world, and a lot of us have very significant trauma that is not easy to deal with. And this kind of brings me back to something I was going to say earlier, which is I think all the time about, it's like a Simpsons quote where Lisa's talking to the substitute teacher and he says something along the lines of like, middle class kids are always going to lose out because there's always going to be somebody who needs help more than you. And that reminds me a lot of what it's like being somebody who has mental health conditions but is labeled as quote unquote high functioning.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, I feel like I am almost put on this pedestal of like mental health, but I'm out there on the pedestal screaming like, I'm still struggling, you guys.
This is still
like a fight for me every day, and like being happy in life is not something that just like comes easily to a lot of us. It's something we have to like fight and struggle for.
Yeah. It's kind of like, and you've seen Inside Out, obviously, right?
Oh, the cartoon. I have not actually. I'm
sorry.
Oh
my god. Okay. Well, obviously, I have a 3-year-old, so obviously I've seen it. And Inside Out 2 just came out, which, you know, it. So when it started, it's joy, sadness, anger, disgust.
I'm familiar with the concept.
Yeah. In the girl, Joy is the main person who does all of the. Or, you know, the main emotion that does all of the headquarter stuff. But William, my husband, pointed out the other day, he's like, it's interesting that the mom's main person at the, or main emotion at the headquarters spot is sadness. And I was like, oh, wow. Like, it just, I don't know why that, like, hit me so hard, because I was like, that's totally who's in control of mine, too. Because, you know, in that sadness is Phyllis from The Office. So I'm always like, I love sadness. And, you know, sadness is definitely kind of an annoyance. Anyway, I don't know. I don't know why that. It's just because I was explaining to my daughter the other day when I was going to therapy, and she asked where we were going. And I said, you know, I'm going to my doctor who helps me with my head. Because have you noticed that? Because she has seen me sad a lot. And, you know, she sees me cry. And you can argue that that's wrong or whatever. But so she knows that I get sad. And so it was just one of those things where I said, you know, my therapist helps me understand why I'm so sad and deal with the sadness so that it doesn't overtake everything. Because some days, yeah, it is. It's so intense that you're just... I mean, yeah, anyway, obviously, if you live with depression, you know what I'm talking about.
Well, and yeah, I think that stereotype is the mom being the harbinger of sadness is really interesting. I was sick last weekend and I binged the first 2 seasons of White Lotus.
Oh, uh-huh.
So have you seen those?
I haven't.
That's okay. We're even.
Yeah, because I really want to see it.
Well, and now I'm like throwing back to the first season, right? Which is like old news at this point. And I talk to people who are really into White Lotus and you can tell they don't even remember the first character, this first season characters. But there's this girl who's going through the struggle of like realizing that she's married this guy that's going to lead her down this path of being basically a trophy wife. And it was giving me like the Yellow Wallpaper vibes, and like thinking of like Sylvia Plath and all of these women from the 19th and 20th centuries who in literature, in retrospect, looking back, really were like shedding light on this experience. And I was, as I'm watching White Lotus, I'm thinking like about the whole concepts of, you know, hysteria with women, and that women have, and I mean, honestly, continue in a lot of circles to still be like medicated pretty heavily. And we really haven't moved far away from cocaine in the day and laudanum at night in the 1800s and early 1900s. Like, that is still kind of the same model that a lot of women are experiencing.
Not just Adderall and benzos or, you know, Ambien.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, for me, it's fairly obvious why you would be suffering from depression if you're living a meaningless existence and you're, you know, and I'm not saying that like,
or even housewives. A perceived meaningless existence, because we do say, oh, you're just a stay-at-home mom. It's like, that is a job.
Yeah, it's and extremely...
So, yeah, but as it feels, I get trapped in that all the time as now being a stay-at-home mom, because I don't really have much of a choice with my son, feeling, am I living a meaningless life? Because that's what we're told as women. So anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. Throw that out. And I mean, to me, the greatest meaning is reproduction, and it is, I think it's super important to have kids and raise smart, healthy, happy, emotionally conscious kids. I think that's really important for whatever comes in the future, you know. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen to the human race, but I think it's important that we try to make it better, right? And so it's just really interesting that there's this like stereotype of moms or women being sad. And it's like, well, yeah, because regardless of the meaning, we don't want to be put in a box that's a box of someone mm-hmm. else's creation. And so it's like being in a prison, and of course you're going to be sad. And I mean, we know that prisons have all these terrible, oh my God, don't even get me started, right? It's like... just really interesting to me. That makes a lot of sense, and it strikes a chord in me, and it frustrates me that I see why we as moms or women are like the stereotype of sadness, but that's not fair. And I think men have it really hard because, you know, it's not socially acceptable for them to express sadness mm-hmm. in the same mm-hmm. way. And so I would assume that they're more like the stereotype of anger, because this is just how
Oh my God, that's so funny, because I was trying to think of what was the main emotion in the dad's head. And I was like, oh yeah, it was anger.
For sure. I mean, so, I could write this movie.
Yeah. Well, I just have to real quick, just because I am so much in this like stay at home mom situation where it's like, yes, raising the next generation is, you know, you could say God's work, or, you know, like one of the most important things in this, you know, world is to raise the next generation to be, you know, fully realized adults, whatever. But when you're in it, it's making food, washing the, you know, keeping the house, you know, tidy so that your kids aren't living in filth. And, you know, these mundane, awful things that nobody really wants to do because they're, you know, called chores for a reason. And so it just, it feeds into that meaninglessness, because you're like, I'm just taking care of the house, even though that just goes into when you're, that's just because right now I've got a toddler and a newborn, but it still is an important, I don't know, it's, I don't, in my head it sounded better.
I think it's interesting how the patriarchy has stripped the meaning from what is actually the most meaningful mm-hmm. work.
Like teachers.
Yeah.
You know, EMTs, you know.
Even putting food on the table.
People, you know? Putting food on the shelves at the grocery store, you know? I mean, that literally is what's keeping us alive.
Yeah, well, it's like I say.
Essential workers. I don't know if anybody remembers the pandemic, but the essential workers are still being treated as they were before the pandemic started. So, like, it did nothing. It changed nothing in the way that we view these essential people. Sorry.
No, it's okay. I say this to my boyfriend a lot because, you know, he's a chef and I work in, I'm a nonprofit director. And so the society would generally tell you that like my job is, I don't even want to say more important, but like higher up on mm-hmm. the hierarchy. But it's like, yeah, we save lives. The work we do is important, but without people being fed, like none of it happens, right? Yeah. Like feeding people, that's like one of the most important things, because without that we can't do anything. So this has really opened up, it's been a lovely conversation. Yeah. We do only have a few minutes left. Yeah. And now I have like a lot more questions and thoughts. So hopefully our listeners have also had their minds expanded and opened a little bit. Yeah. And hopefully this has resonated a bit. At the end of last episode, we were like really quickly talking about some of the changes with the federal government. Honestly, there's not a lot of concrete information. I'm like very intrigued at the flip-floppery I'm already starting to see at the federal level. But I did just want to briefly at least mention, you know, I'm just really concerned about Health and Human Services. Obviously, they're, you know, looking at all these like budget cuts and things like that, which is really frustrating. The threat that harm reduction services could be under is really scary. Specifically, they are trying to eliminate some budgeting for like HIV prevention, which is really scary, especially in our rural communities. Like Picken County has the highest rate of new HIV cases of any rural states in Colorado. And our other counties that we currently serve, Summit, Eagle, Garfield, and Lake, are also like in, like, I think that those are actually the top five counties in the state. And you can kind of see on the map from CDPHE, it's like the I-70 corridor, right? We have a lot more. So like HIV is not going away. I am a firm believer that we can cure it in our lifetimes because medications exist to get people down to undetectable levels where they can't pass HIV. So there's been a lot of awesome changes. But yeah, we need funding. And so, you know, nothing really super big and scary right now, but just a lot of mumblings that are making me very uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Also, I think we did talk about this last time. You know, everyone's like, overdoses are down. Overdoses are down. I'm going to say it again. Overdoses were down.
Last year.
They are not down now. They're up. We've had a lot of local reversals. We've also lost some people locally. There was 8 overdose deaths in the Denver metro area the first week of March. So there is some nasty stuff out there. It's sounding like it's more powder than pills. So just if you're, you know, using powders, please always carry Narcan, be around people who have Narcan and know how to use it, and or use fentanyl test strips, which we also provide.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, be careful. I mean, even just being in Denver, you see it. I mean, I told the story about walking to the hospital and then, you know, driving down the road. There's a couple times where you see the ambulance showing up and you see someone, you know, unconscious on the road, you know. And yeah, and I just, on that note of everything that we've been talking about too, I just also wanted to just throw out there that the patriarchy doesn't just hurt women. It really, really hurts men almost probably more because they're put into an even smaller box than we are. So
absolutely.
I just wanted to say that. And I really appreciate these conversations and what you're doing for sure.
Oh yeah. So. Well, and yeah, you truly are. You're doing the Lord's work together. I do want to just remind folks that we are, you know, out providing harm reduction services, free Narcan, fentanyl test strips, syringe disposal, snorting kits, free pipes, the whole nine yards. Every Thursday in Aspen and Snowmass, every Friday in Basalt and Carbondale. You can find our full schedule at highrockiesharmreduction.com. And we are really excited to announce that we do now have a weekly location in Glenwood. We're over at the Glenwood Mall Wednesdays from 12 to 2, and in Newcastle at the Queer Resource Space down there on Main Street Wednesday nights from 4 to 6. And we will be adding a monthly location in Rifle, fingers crossed, awesome, in June. So more information on that to come.
Yay. Awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks for another amazing show. Sorry to cut us short, but always appreciate our talks.
Was great. Yeah. And we'll be on the air next month, 4 p.m. on June 9th.
That is correct. And remember, you don't have to be sober
to keep your community clean.
Yay.
Have to be sober to keep your community clean, 'cause we are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl or boy. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical gender nondescript. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl. You know we are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl.